One thing we learned through the new version of Flannel Graph is that Joseph has ADHD. He can't sit still, and and he sort of flies through the air, kind of like the preschoolers. You know, they're all over the place. Got a question. Is it a wound or is it a scar? Hey, Forrest. I was in high school, and I had a job working with a trim carpenter. Gary and Tony were my bosses. Gary was one of the deacons at church, and he and Tony had this business of building cabinets and doing all the trim work inside houses. And so my junior year, I had an after-school job with them, and I would go in. There were certain things they didn't let me do, like touch the cabinets, but I got a lot of the baseboard work and got to do some of the trim around the doors, a lot of sanding. And then one particular day, they had me making shims, little pieces of wood, you know, that kind of go in to even things up. I was making them out of wooden shingles. And I did that by cutting them down on a table saw. You might see where this story is going. And so I'm pushing them through, and I've got another thing that pushes it through, and then when it gets on the other side of the blade, I would kind of just use my left hand and pull it out of the way. Did that, pull it out of the way. Did that, pull it out of the way. And on this one particular shim, I mean, as I'm pushing it through, it's almost all the way out, and I grab it, but it had a knot in it, in the wood, and that knot caught, and it pulled it back. And it jerked so fast, and my hand was still attached to the wood. And it got my thumb, and it kind of went at a diagonal across that. And yes, there was blood everywhere. And I remember going and grabbing Gary, and we went out to his truck. He gets the first aid equipment. And then I'm like, Gary, I got to sit down. Something about the sight of blood, and seeing it was my blood, I didn't like that. And so I sat down for a little bit, and then he takes me to the emergency room. They can't like stitch it or anything. There was nothing to stitch. It was just hamburger, basically. And sorry if you were going to have burgers for lunch, but and they bandage it all up, and then I kind of go on my not so merry way. But I remember having to. It was on that when I played my basketball games. It was and it got hurt. It would hurt when it got hit. Eventually, it began to heal over, and the skin started forming. The nail was coming back, and pretty much my whole thumb. It was not as bad as I thought over time, but it on the outside, it looked healed. But if you just touched it, what was down underneath was very tender. And I mean, a year later and 2 years later, it was getting less and less, but you just touched spots, and it would... You just kind of do that. So it's like, don't do that. And so I learned to not do that. But after so many years, it didn't have those tender spots anymore. That wound had become now just a scar. Some of us have physical wounds, but there are other wounds. The wounds that are on the inside of the emotional, mental, psychological kind. Some wounds are given to us by others. Some wounds are our consciences are wounded because of something that we have done to others. I've given the name to this message today called Opening Wounds and Wounded Consciences. We are continuing a series called Meant for Good on the life of Joseph. And we will be in Genesis 42 today. But as we pick up in that story, some of us will realize that sometimes the bruises on the outside don't hurt near as much as the bruises on the inside. And today we're going to see an old wound that is about to be opened because Joseph is going to encounter his brothers some 20 plus years later, the ones that sold him into slavery so many years ago. But it may not necessarily be the wounds that you're thinking of. So here's how this story sets up. End of chapter 41 reminds us that there is a severe famine that is happening throughout the earth, and especially in that part of the earth where they're at. They're in Egypt and Canaan and all of that land. How it got to this was Joseph is now second in command in Egypt. The famine has come about because Pharaoh had had a dream. Pharaoh had a dream about some skinny cows and fat cows, and the skinny cows ended up eating the fat cows, and nobody could interpret it, and along comes Joseph, and the cupbearer, who Joseph interpreted his dream, said, hey, there's this guy that's down in prison. He interpreted mine. Maybe he can do yours. Fast forward, he interprets Pharaoh's dreams, tells him what it's going to be. It's about 7 good years we're going to have, and then it's going to be followed by 7 years of famine. And here's what we can do about it. Pharaoh was so impressed that he says, I'm going to put you in charge of this whole thing. And in fact, he put Joseph. Joseph went really from prison to the palace pretty quick. And so Joseph is now second in command, and they've had the 7 years of plenty. He's now married. He's got 2 kids, and they're in the 7 years of famine. Beginning of chapter 42, these first 5 verses, I'm just going to kind of summarize a little bit. But Jacob, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, this Jacob, the one with the 12 sons, he and his boys and their families, they are getting hungry because of the famine that is all throughout the land. And they get word that, oh, there's grain in Egypt. We can go there. So boys, why don't you go to Egypt, buy some grain, and bring it back? But not only was Jacob hungry, Jacob was kind of an overprotective dad. Because he says, yeah, you 10 boys, you go, but Benjamin, he's going to stay here with me. Now, Benjamin was the baby of the family. Do we got any babies of the family here? Yeah, raise the hand. Do it proudly. Come on. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, there are some babies. That's me. Yeah, yeah. There are certain characteristics to babies of the family. If you've ever read any of Kevin Lehman's stuff, he does some stuff on birth order. But there are characteristics of only children and firstborns and baby of the families. There's the middle children, but we won't even talk about them. The irony here with Jacob and not sending Benjamin, and we're not really sure why, but is it because Benjamin is the baby? Is it because Benjamin is the only son left from his favorite wife, Rachel, who died giving birth to Benjamin? And the other son, Joseph, presumes is dead because that's what he's been told. Maybe that's why. But Benjamin at this time is probably about 30 years old, somewhere in that range. He's no longer like a kid. He's an adult. But is that not true that sometimes as parents, our kids are still our kids and are still our babies, no matter how old they get? And if you kind of took special care of that baby, sometimes they're still your baby. One thing I do know, that a lot of those babies of the family don't like to be called baby. Is that right? But you still are. That's all I'm saying. Well, we move into what's going to take place, and I'm going to run through these things just so you kind of get an idea. The first movement we're going to see is there's going to be a recognition that takes place when Joseph and his brothers kind of come together. We'll see who recognizes who. Then after that, there's going to be a remembrance. Joseph is going to remember some things. He's going to remember a dream. Then there's going to be the reprimand. Somebody's going to get in trouble. Then, after the reprimand, there's going to be a reckoning. Because the ones who get in trouble go, oh no, this is it. Here's what's happening. But it's going to wrap up with a restoration, or I should say a beginning of a restoration, that will begin to take place not only in this chapter, but over the next several chapters. So, chapter 42, let's begin with verse 6. This is the recognition phase. Now Joseph was the ruler over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. This is an important part in the story. I'm going to come back to it in a minute. Verse 7, when Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he disguised himself to them. Some of your versions say he pretended to be a stranger. He disguised himself to them and spoke to them harshly. And he said, where have you come from? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. But Joseph recognized his brothers, although they did not recognize him. Now we can kind of see this. It has been over 20 years, 20 plus years. He was 17 when he got sold into slavery, all the way till he's the age of 30 when he interprets Pharaoh's dreams, and he moves him into a position of being second in command. Note the irony here. Joseph at the age of 30 is going to become second in command in Egypt. Benjamin, who somewhere around the age of 30, Jacob is still treating him as the baby of the family and going, oh no, we're not going to send him. Back to Joseph. There's then been 7 years of plenty. So now he's at least 37. Plus we're into the years of famine, sometime into the years of famine. So Joseph is somewhere close to 40 by now. So it's been 20 plus years since he has seen his brothers. You change a little bit from the age of 17 to the age of 40, do you not? Sometimes there's less hair. Sometimes it's already starting to turn gray. But there's features about you if you've gained weight or lost weight or, you know, other things. But it would have been easier for Joseph to recognize his brothers. Much easier. One, there's 10 of them, and they all kind of have a similar look. They were already a little bit older than Joseph, so they'd already made those changes. So he sees them, but they have no clue. Even if they had known where Joseph had gone, they would have never imagined that their little brother would be ruler in Egypt. That just doesn't make sense. So Joseph recognizes them, but he doesn't say anything. He just kind of lets it go. And so we find in this recognition, verse 9, that Joseph is going to remember something. Verse 9, it says, Joseph remembered the dreams that he had about them. And then he said, you're spies. Joseph remembers the dreams. When Joseph was a young man, he had a couple of dreams. The dreams that sort of got him in trouble with his brothers. The dreams about the sheaves and their sheaves of wheat all bowed down to his sheaf of wheat. And the stars and their stars bowed down to his star. There's no way they're ever going to bow down to little brother. Even the sun and moon would do that. That will take place later. Verse 6, I said it was an important thing. When they get to Egypt, the 10 brothers, what do? Verse 6 tells us, Joseph's brothers came and they bowed down with their faces to the ground. Some 20 years later, the fulfillment of Joseph's dream is taking place. God tended to use dreams to tell some things that were going to happen in the future. And he did so through Joseph, or allowed Joseph to interpret other people's dreams that did the same thing. And so Joseph remembers this. Then we see the reprimand about to take place. When Joseph remembers the dreams, and he remembers them bowing down, he remembers all this stuff, and he recognizes his brothers, he does not tell them, hey, this is Joseph. He actually begins to speak harshly to them and accuse them, accusing them of being spies. And you've just come out here just to scope out our land. You're trying to see where we're weak, what's not being defended. I know what you're doing, you're spies. Now the brothers, now they're getting defensive. They're going on the defense here. They don't know what's taking place because they're just here to buy food. So they're sort of backing up, no, we are, and this is what they say. We are your servants. We have come to find food. Verse 11, we are sons of one man. We are honest men, your servants. We are not spies. All of that is true. They are the sons of one man, Jacob. they are, in a sense, the servants of, they're in a foreign land, and right now they are bowing down, giving homage to the leader there. They are not spies, that is true. But they say, we are honest men. I put a little question mark out beside that because I'm thinking, honest men? Aren't they the ones that sold their brother into slavery? Aren't they one that told their dad about it and continued to this day to let their dad believe that Joseph was ravaged and eaten up by wild animals? And but as they try to defend themselves, Joseph still keeps coming back at him and still accusing them. No, this is what you are. He's testing them, I believe, to see what they are going to do. And when then they come out and they begin to reveal a little bit more about who they are. Because now they say, we do have that one man, our father, and there were 12 of us originally. There's 10 now. One of them is no more. That's Joseph. They don't realize that he's there. And then we've got a younger brother. I wonder if Joseph was wondering, okay, I see all the boys. Where's Benjamin? Did they do to Benjamin like they did to me? Did they sell him? Did they kill him? When Joseph hears that, he then begins to make a plan. How about this? How about I keep all of you, and one of you go back and get that younger brother, bring him here. So then Joseph puts him in timeout, in a sense. He puts him in prison for 3 days. Now, I don't like timeouts. I don't always know how helpful they are, and or to send a kid to their room for timeout, into the room where they have TV and video games and all that stuff to play. But I remember when I was in school, in upper elementary, they used to give us, quote, a timeout at the end of the, well, they called it detention, is what they called it. And if you got marks, they would put a mark down if in any of your classes they had monitors, and if you got caught talking or being mischievous, you got a mark. If you got 2 marks in the week, you were in detention on Friday. If you got 5 marks in 1 week, you got 5 swats. We had some boys, and I remember one particular boy, he got swats all the time. Because he would rather, if I've already got 2 or 3 and have to stay on Friday, I might as well go get 2 more, get the swats, and get to go home. And so he got swats quite a bit, so he didn't have to stay in detention. I got 2 marks the entire year. I was a good boy. I was Joseph. I was the favorite. Yeah. I know some of you are having trouble believing it, but that is true. Yeah. So here they are. And I think it was like a cat playing with that little grasshopper or the cricket, and it's got it under its paw and it just keeps messing with it. But it's going to let it go its way. It's just right now the cat wants to play with it. And the cat knows, oh, I'm going to let it go here in a little bit. But the grasshopper doesn't know. The grasshopper thinks he's about to be eaten. And so here's the brothers. They're sitting in jail. And uh-oh, we have been reprimanded. And we're in a foreign country. And we don't know what to do. And we're sitting in this jail. And now he wants to keep us here and send one back home. And so they're stewing, thinking, waiting. What's going to take place? Verse 18. Now Joseph said to them on the third day, do this and live, for I fear, this is the reckoning about to take place, I fear God. The Egyptian king, the Egyptian ruler saying he fears God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined in your prison, but as for the rest of you, go carry grain in the famine of your households. Well, he changes his tune just a little bit. Earlier he had said, one of you go back, I'll keep the rest of you here. Now he changes his mind after 3 days and says, tell you what, I'm just going to keep one of you here. The rest of you can go back. But to know that you're telling the truth, you've got to bring the younger brother back here. You show me that Benjamin is still alive. He doesn't say that out loud, but this is the test. When they hear this, they began to talk among themselves. And as they talk among themselves, one of the brothers, we don't know which one, says, "Truly we are guilty concerning our brother. We saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us." Can you imagine what Joseph was going through as they're trying to get rid of him, trying to sell him off, put him in a pit when he thinks he's going to be killed? "We saw the distress of his soul, but we would not listen. Therefore, this distress has come upon us." Past guilt is coming to the surface, sitting there waiting, pondering, wondering what's happening next. How long had this guilt eaten at some of them? It's been going on 20 years. Was it some of them? Was it all of them? Had they had conversations when Jacob wasn't around? Had one confided in the other saying, "You know, I still can't get past this thing with Joseph"? Then Reuben speaks up. Reuben is the firstborn. He's the oldest. And Reuben then says, "Didn't I tell you? I tried to tell you not to do it. Don't sin against the boy, but you wouldn't listen to me." Well, Reuben is right. Originally, the brothers wanted to kill Joseph, and Reuben's like, no, we're not going to kill him. He had a different plan. We'll just put him in a pit with the intent of going back and getting him. Maybe Reuben should have stepped up instead of just spoken up. He ends it by saying, "Now comes the reckoning for his blood." We know the feeling about guilt that kind of comes to the surface, guilt from the past. How many times have we continued to beat ourselves up after many years? We do so, and it comes out sometimes in this way. If only I had been, and we play those games. If you had, we have to be careful if only conversation comes out. But now comes the reckoning. And in a sense, the reckoning is going to take place, but not as they are thinking. Joseph, though, while the brothers are having their conversation, Joseph is over in the corner. Or as the flannel graph showed us a while ago, he was hiding his head up over the door. But Joseph is listening in. And unbeknownst to them, Joseph understands every word they said. As we've been reading so far, Joseph and his brothers have had a conversation back and forth. What we don't know until now is that that conversation has been happening through an interpreter. Joseph has been speaking Egyptian, one of the ways that he's kept his disguise, and the interpreter would then explain it to them. So when they're having their little conversation about this guilt that went on, and about the past with Joseph, Joseph is over here hearing everything. And how does he respond? Verse 24, he turned away from them and he wept. Joseph hears his brothers, having a conversation about what they did to him over two decades ago. And then he weeps. Could it be because he's being reminded of the distress of his soul when he was pleading? And it brought back some old memories? It's funny, those emotional wounds and things from the past and how they evoke such emotion. I think maybe it was more because, and the Bible doesn't really tell us here, but maybe we can assume that as he sees his brothers wrestling with this, it does his heart good a little bit, but it hurts to know that they also have been wrestling with the guilt from so many years. And so Joseph weeps and he turns away because he doesn't want them to know that he knows, to know that he understands. Some of us are like that. We don't want people to know that we're crying. Men are that way. We don't want anybody to know that we're tearing up over that movie or to tearing up over that little tearjerker thing. And I've always been that way. Even as a kid, I watch a movie and they get me. I watch movies about brothers and then, yeah. Then I became a dad of daughters and those movies killed me. And yeah, some of you know that. And the older I get, the worse it's getting. We watched Where the Red Fern Grows the other day with my granddaughter. Oh yeah, dogs died, I cried. But when I was a kid, Brian's Song, some of you know that movie, Brian Piccolo and Gale Sayers, one of the all-time great sports movies. You listen to a sports radio and they'll talk about the all-time, Brian's Song is always in the top two or three. And I remember as a kid, elementary age, watching this movie, and I loved the movie, but every time I would bawl. I'm an elementary kid. Why is this hitting me so hard? But the one thing I did not want is anybody to see me crying. Well, I had a little sister. She was the baby of the family, 2 years behind me. She always wanted to watch me cry. And so, it's those babies, I'm telling you. But she would chase me I would go to the bathroom, I would go to the bedroom, somewhere to get out of sight. And I remember, it's still vivid, I'm up against the door holding it so she can't watch me cry, trying to keep her out as she tries to get in to watch me cry. Joseph doesn't want his brothers to see that he's weeping about the situation. And so he then, kind of like he did earlier, comes back to a little more stern acting. And what does he do? He goes and he takes Simeon and he binds him up. We don't know why it's Simeon. It doesn't tell us that the brothers all drew straws and it came up Simeon, or that Simeon offered, or if Joseph, they never chose, so Joseph chose for them and he picked Simeon. I can imagine he didn't pick Reuben because Reuben actually had tried to help him before. Simeon is the second oldest. Maybe it's because of that. Maybe Simeon was the instigator. Simeon also had a past with Simeon and Levi, who was the third born. They were the two that killed Shechem and his brothers after the Dinah, their sister, was raped. But they ended up killing not only the one who did, but so many more. And got the wrath of Jacob. Is this coming back to haunt? We don't know why, but we find that Simeon is going to be left there in jail. But now we begin to see the beginning of restoration. Verse 25, then Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain and to restore every man's money in a sack and to give them provisions for the journey. So it was done for them. So they loaded their donkeys with their grain and they departed from there. The very money that they came to buy the grain with, they're going home with. And they're going home with their grain and any other provisions that they would need for the journey or that Joseph supposed that they would need. Joseph is giving them grace. Now they're unaware of this. They're unaware of the grace that is giving them right now, because they take it in a different fashion. Here's how they respond. As one of them opens his sack, verse 27, to give his donkey some fodder at the lodging place, he saw his money, and it was still in the mouth of a sack. Happened to be an olive. And he said to his brothers, my money's been returned. It's even in my sack. And it says their hearts sank. Then they trembled. And then they blamed God. What's God doing to us? Now, when I get extra money, I'm thinking, oh, it's a blessing. Now, what is God doing to me? And so I wondered, why? Why are they blaming God for this money being restored in their sacks? Could it be the guilt that is still plaguing them when they all find their money? Not ever asking, because in their mind, this can only be a bad thing. Sometimes guilt gets in the way of accepting grace or accepting good. At first glance, it may have seemed that the brothers showing up in Egypt opened an old wound for Joseph. When we first look, that's what we may think we see. But what we find is that his brothers' wounds of their consciences has been eating at them for years. While what seemed to maybe open an old wound to Joseph wasn't really a wound after all, but it has now become a scar. How about you? Are you one who's had an old wound? Having been wounded by another? And it's festered under the surface for years. And by now it's built up some resentment or some bitterness. Maybe you've lived with the guilt of some wrongs done in your past, and you've kept them hidden in secret, afraid that they might come to light, and you haven't sought forgiveness, nor have you received or accepted it. You're just waiting for the hammer to drop. I'm going to read a poem to you by my baby sister. She is the baby of the family. She's the Benjamin of our family, 2 years younger than me, which makes me next to the youngest, which is kind of like in the story of Joseph. Joseph was the next story. Once again, I'm Joseph, the favorite. But this sister had written a poem after some experiences in her life, and it was called Scars, and I think it's quite fitting. Time cannot mend the scars of the past. In a way, it will be made to last. And though it may happen a long time to be, the pain's not so harsh and the wounds aren't so free. Though salt may be added by resentment or hate, the wound will close up, either early or late. As time prances on, you'll look back and find that it gets smaller and smaller as time falls behind. Though the wound still seems tender and easy to hurt, and the cleaning be painful as you wash out the dirt, you'll look at the wound and see from afar that the wound is no longer left, but a scar. My prayer for you today is that the wounds of your past, either way, something done to you or something you've done to others, that they've become scars, distant memories of hurts or failures, not controlling your present anymore. Sometimes, looking back, we may look at the scar and see how God has brought good into our lives, even despite the wounds. So today may be the beginning of a restoration for you. Maybe you need to let it be the beginning of a relationship wound that needs to be restored. Can't tell you how often I hear of somebody talking about a family member that they have not spoken to in years because of something that was said or something that was done a long time ago, and it has festered under the surface, and all that's needed is a little bit of forgiveness. Maybe forgiveness needs to be given to somebody else, and that will begin the restoration for you. Or maybe you need to accept the forgiveness that somebody else is granting you, or that maybe God is granting you. Sometimes guilt so eats us up that we feel like we're not worthy enough to accept the good or grace that comes our way. And for some of you, maybe it's this. Maybe you need to accept the grace that is given by Jesus. The grace granted to us on the cross by accepting His forgiveness to remove your guilt. Isaiah chapter 53 reminds us that the Messiah, Jesus, was wounded for our transgressions, so that we could be forgiven. What will you do to begin your restoration? Let's pray. Father, in this room right now are some wounds. Now, some of those wounds are really fresh. There has been hurt. There has been loss. There has been pain dealt out. Father, I pray in those spots that you will comfort and wrap your arms around these individuals and allow healing to take place in its time. But Father, in this room also, there are some people dealing with some old wounds that on the surface might seem to be just a scar, but it's still tender on the inside. And bygones haven't been bygones. And conversations have been avoided, and places and people have been avoided for fear of the hurt that is still there. And for others here, the guilt has eaten at them for so long that they cannot get beyond it. Never able to forgive themselves, not allowing you to forgive them. Your grace is greater than our sin. Your grace is so good. May we be, in a sense, like Joseph, allowing wounds to no longer fester and boil, but just become scars. And may we know where to go. May we turn to you. And we ask this through Jesus, the one who has the scars already in his palm of his hand from the nails on the cross. We pray. Amen.
Hey church, we're so glad you tuned in today. If you need prayer or have questions about this week's message or what it means to follow Jesus, you can message us on Facebook or visit our contact page on our website at whackonline.org. If you're interested in joining our church family, we have the next steps available for you on our website as well. Remember, we are real people experiencing real grace. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.